Blog Talk Radio.
I release all disappointment from my mental, physical, spiritual, and emotional body. 'Cause I know that spirit guides me, and love lives inside me. That's why today I take life as it comes.
Greetings. Greetings, everyone. Welcome again to Higher Consciousness. I am your host and your guest this evening. My name is Professor Jamila Franklin, and I am the host of Higher Consciousness, as I just stated. And I am so honored, as always, to have you listening to our wonderful show. Higher Consciousness is a show that deals with metaphysical topics and spiritual topics, and we cover everything from a metaphysical perspective. And we are very interested in hearing from you to get your feedback and your questions. We welcome comments from our listening audience, and we are broadcasting around the world, not just within the United States, but internationally. And as always, I give a little bit of background information about myself. I am a college professor. I am a certified aromatherapist, a certified Reiki master, certified metaphysician. I teach energy medicine. I have my own holistic counseling and holistic life coaching practice. And I am an author. So I wanted to have a show to allow people to talk about their different concerns and issues in a from a metaphysical perspective, because I see so many people who are now looking at the world through metaphysical lenses, even though they may not know that they are being metaphysical when they make their comments. A lot of times they are, because this planet has evolved at such a rapid pace, and I'm so honored to be here on the planet at this time as a result of that. And this evening, before I get into tonight's topic, each week I give an overview of the number of downloads that we have had to date. So we have had over 46,700 downloads since the show first debuted in October, more specifically October 22nd, 2012. So I'm very thankful to each and every one of you. It is because of you that the show is a huge, huge success. And as I said, I thank you and thank you and thank you. This week, tonight's topic, we will continue our discussion from 2 weeks ago, which is E squared. Last week we had such a dynamic guest. We had Professor Claudette Alexander Thomason, and she talked about her childhood. She's also a playwright and author, and as I said before, she is a professor. And she gave us a lot of really good information about what transpired in her childhood. And she had a wonderful way of telling the stories that transpired throughout her childhood and up into her young adulthood. And listening to Professor Thomason, everyone went away from that show, as well as when they meet her in person, feeling so exhilarated, feeling so happy and joyful, because she has a way of just making you feel that way. She's just a dynamic and wonderful person, and I'm so honored to know her and to call her a colleague and a friend. So we really, really delighted in hearing her talk about in the beginning was the word. And she was talking about the word in terms of literature, in terms of African-American literature and literature in general. Because as it says, she's a playwright and an author, a poet, a novelist, and a college professor. So she definitely will come back on the show in the not-too-distant future. Again, last week we had Professor Claudette Alexander Thomason, phenomenal person. Look for her because you would definitely hear from her internationally in terms of her works very, very, very soon. Well, tonight, as I said before, we're going to continue our discussion regarding E Squared by Pam Grout. As you know, I am, as I stated earlier, I am a certified metaphysician, and I just so love talking about things from a metaphysical perspective. I lecture on that. I have my own practice, too, in the greater Atlanta, Georgia area. And I would welcome my listeners to go to my website. My website is www.oyendeenterprises.com. Again, my website is www.oyendeenterprises.com. And if anyone would like to talk to me offline, my business number is 770-882-7347. Again, my business number is 770-882-7347. To find out more about my services, because I do have clients around the world, and I do consultations live as well as via Skype. So I would welcome the opportunity to work with anyone in the listening audience who would like to take advantage of any of my services that I've mentioned in terms of holistic psychotherapy, life coaching, aromatherapy, or if you're interested and becoming a certified Reiki master. And if you are a massage therapist, I am a nationally approved provider for all 50 states. So any massage therapist, esthetician, or body worker who takes my courses would receive continuing education units. So feel free to give me a call, 770-882-7347 after the show has aired. And for this evening, if you would like to talk to me about the topics I'm going to discuss or join me in a conversation, the number online is 1-818-572-8023 and press 1. Again, to talk to me live on the air, you would just dial 1-818-572-8023 and press 1. Tonight, like I said before, we're going to finish our discussion on E Squared. If you haven't had the opportunity to download this book on Kindle or to buy it, please add this to your collection of books. It's just really, really phenomenal. Jack Canfield, co-creators of Chicken Soup for the Soul series, states, "I absolutely love this book. Pam has combined a writing style as funny as Ellen DeGeneres with a wisdom as deep and profound as Deepak Chopra's." And on the back of the book it states, "E Squared could best be described as a laugh manual with simple experiments that prove reality is malleable, consciousness trumps matter, and you shape your life with your mind." Yes, you read that right and heard that right. And the 9 experiments, each of which can be conducted with absolutely no money and very little time expenditure, demonstrate that spiritual principles are as dependable as gravity, as consistent as Newton's laws of motion. Rather than take it on faith, E Squared invites you to prove the following principles. One, there is an invisible energy force or field of infinite possibilities. Two, you impact the field and draw from it according to your beliefs and expectations. Three, your connection to the field provides accurate and unlimited guidance. Four, the universe is limitless, abundant, and strangely accommodating. Now, I'll give you some information about the author. Pam Grout is the author of 16 books, 3 plays, a television series, and 2 iPhone apps. She writes for People Magazine, CNNGo.com, The Huffington Post, and her travel blog. Okay. Find out more about Pam and her out-of-the-box take on life on her website, which is www.pamgrout.com. Again, her website is www.pamgrout.com. Okay, so we're going to have a fireside chat about this thing called energy. And as we've discussed on so many shows that I've had, there's nothing solid in the universe. So even though you're looking at your hand and you're looking at your body and you're looking at your television and you're looking at the furniture in your room and you think that it's solid, none of those things, not one, is solid. And I know people would say, she must be crazy. When I hit this table, you know, my hand doesn't go through it. It's hard, and I can feel it, and it hurts my hand, so it is solid. When I hit my chest, my hand doesn't go through it. You know, it's firm, it's solid. When I get in my car, it's not invisible. I sit on a seat, which is solid, and I hold the steering wheel, which is solid. So all these things are solid, regardless of what Professor Franklin has to say about it. But in fact, it really isn't. What you would see if you take a powerful microscope and put everything that I just named underneath the microscope, you would see electrical impulses. And we've talked about this in the past on some of my other shows. But Pam really brings this down home, and the last time I talked about some of the exercises that she mentioned, and let me just go over some of them because they definitely work. First of all, what I want you to do, and you know, if you can call in and we can talk about it if you have any questions, is just put this to the test. The name of the book is called E Squared, and it's the number one New York Times bestseller by Pam Grout, Grout. Put everything that I'm saying to the test. Your thoughts are very, 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 very intense and very powerful. And most people think, oh, no, they're not. You know, I can't see them. I can't touch them. How can they be powerful? They're powerful. Everything that's in your life now, you have created or manifested on some level. And the thing that I talk about a lot on my show is to have us be aware. So if you're aware of how powerful you are, you can then control your thoughts, not control them in terms of stopping them, but you can say, okay, this thought, you can ask yourself, is this thought going to give me what I want, or is this thought going to take away my power? Give you an example. If you're thinking that your boss is going to fire you and you keep thinking that thought, that is going to become your reality. So you have a 50% chance of being fired and a 50% chance of not being fired. Or if your boss releases you, I don't believe in really firing, then it means the universe is creating a bigger and better opportunity. So we just have to look at how we view things and view them differently. But people spend so much time worrying about things that have not happened, and then they worry into existence those very things that they say that they don't want to happen. And then they blame, as I've said before, the devil. They blame the economy. They blame their neighbors. They blame their children. The children blame their parents. Everyone is in the blame game, and it serves no purpose. So people are blaming each other or blaming things outside of themselves, and that takes away all of your power. You have no power when that happens. And I'm going to step on some toes here, and I know that I am. But people, because I'm non-denominational, but people who practice the different religions, Christianity, Islam, Judaism, Yoruba, Buddhism, Confucianism, whatever their belief is, a lot of times people are giving their power away to things outside of themselves. I know a lot of times Christians always say that the enemy is going to keep you from doing things. So who is the enemy? You know, because I become really confused. And they say, well, Satan. And I've said this before. Whatever you think about and focus upon becomes your reality. And so when I hear Christians making a statement, and I have a Christian background, so I'm not just making disparaging remarks about Christians, because I'm going to talk about the other religions as well. I ask this question. In Christianity, I know when I grew up, it had been stated that the battle has been waged and won. So, and I ask them if they believe that, and most say yes. So my next question then is, if the battle has been waged and won, why are you giving all this power to Satan? Because the battle has been waged and won. So, you know, you're putting your faith in something that you said has already been decided. You've given the power away to, quote-unquote, as you call Satan, the enemy, when you say, in fact, that God is in charge. So a lot of them have to ponder and think about that one, because in doing so and giving their power away, it means that they then don't have to take personal responsibility for their choices. So I tell people that the sky is not the limit. Your mind is the limit. So when people are dealing with religion, particularly Christianity or Islam, and Satan in Islam is called Shaitan, the same thing. You know, people who are Islamic give their power away to this force as well. And my whole question that I ask very seriously is, which are you going to believe? Are you going to believe, as my accountability partner in metaphysics asks, are you going to believe God, or are you going to believe your circumstances? You can't believe both. So giving your power away to Satan or Shaitan or the devil or whatever the malevolent force is that is present in a lot of the religious literature, to me means that we're not believing that infinite source is in charge. And that's okay. But my purpose in the show is to show us how we unintentionally give away our power. And if we're believing that the infinite source, Allah, Jehovah, Yeshua, God, the universe is all that is, then there's no room to have this duality of this other thing that is less than. And so I'm not saying that energy, lower vibrational energies, don't exist, because they do. But once you see them, because you are in control and the universe has imbued you with this and is wanting you to see that you're made in a reflection of the Most High, infinite source. So if you're made in that reflection, how can you be powerless? Except what? When you give away your power. And so many of us decide to do that because it's easy. If I keep blaming the economy or the government or my job or my husband or whatever, Satan or whatever, then I can just skip through the tulips and not take any responsibility for my choices. Well, the devil made me do it, or I couldn't do this because of the economy, or my husband wouldn't allow me to do it, or my children. So we keep exonerating ourselves from accepting any responsibility, because what we do is we conveniently give away our power. And in doing so, it doesn't solve any problems because the issue is still there. So with Pam and her book is so wonderful because what she does, and regardless of religion, religious people, spiritual people, people of all walks of faith, life, do this. She shows you how you get distracted. And she gives you exercises to train your mind to stay on the path of whatever your belief system is, be it Judaism, be it Islam, be it Christianity, be it Buddhism. She shows you how to stay focused so you can allow the infinite source to move through you, to direct you and guide you to what you say you desire in your life. Because if it has not shown up, the universe, God, Allah, Jehovah, is here to give you your most high desires. So if it hasn't shown up in a number of years, there is something that you are doing to block it. So this evening, we're going to go over the book again in very minute detail and just see what thoughts are you holding within your consciousness that are blocking you from going to the next level, because thoughts are powerful. So now, go do a recap. In chapter one, she has the first experiment, and it's called the Dude Abides Principle. And the philosophy in this experiment in chapter is, there is an invisible energy force or field of infinite possibilities. So what she does is she tells you to put everything that she's saying to the test. And what she does is she gives you experiments to do, and she tells to look for the manifestation of these experiments within 24 to 48 hours, and they definitely will manifest. And like I said, I'm going to do a recap. For experiment one, this experiment will prove to you once and for all that there is a loving, abundant, totally hip force in the universe. Some people call it God. You can call it prana, the all there is, or you can call it Jehovah or whatever. She says, whatever you want to call it. The problem up until now is we've had to take this force on faith. We weren't allowed to see it or touch it. But we've sure been asked to do lots of things in its name, like tithe and meditate and put ashes on our heads. She also has a sense of humor. I much prefer the idea of an energy force that moves on two-way streets. And she says, that does give and take ring any bells? In this experiment, we're going to let the FP, which means the field of potentiality, the field of all possibilities, know that baby is now or never. We are so over-believing in something that gets its jollies playing hide-and-seek. We want irrefutable proof, and we want it now. You know those four little initials, ASAP? Well, those are the same ones we're shooting for. We're going to give the FP, the field of potentiality, the field of possibilities, exactly 48 hours to give us a sign, a clear sign that cannot be written off. Okay? And she says, because we bought this idea that the force is vague and mysterious, we don't really expect to find it, or at least we're not supposed to find it, and we're not surprised when we don't, because we haven't been trained to notice. This inspiring, energizing, life-altering force is zooming in, around, and through us without our awareness. For those who want to wait for the pearly gates, go right ahead. It's like a modern-day person refusing to use electricity. All you have to do to access electricity is to find an outlet, plug in an electronic device or appliance, and voila, you get all sorts of cool stuff. Toasted bread, music that's piped in from radio towers, movies and news, and fellow humans eating slugs on deserted islands. We have to refrain ourselves to think of this energy force the same way we think of electricity. We don't wonder, am I good enough to plug my toaster oven in that outlet? Or have I prayed long enough or deep enough to deserve the right to flick on the kitchen lights? We don't wonder about that. Okay. We don't feel guilty for wanting to turn on the radio and listen to NPR. The field of potentiality or field of possible dreams is just as non-prejudiced and available as electricity once we make the decision to really look for it. And that's not hard to find. In this section where we talk about the elephants in the room, yes, I'm talking about God. Unless you just crawled out from underneath the cabbage leaf, you probably observed that an awful lot of people talk about this guy named God. One out of every 7 days is devoted to worshiping him. Buildings of all shapes and sizes have been built to honor him. Many newspapers have a religious section right next to the political section, the local news, the weather, and the crossword puzzle. Some version of God, to borrow a moniker from a cult classic, the Big Lebowski, she calls God the Dude, exists in every culture that has ever existed. Even physicists whose sole line of work is studying the properties and interactions of matter and energy know about the invisible force. Most of them do not call it God. Albert Einstein, for example, claimed no belief in the traditional God, but he sure as heck knew there was something a whole lot juicier out there in the cosmos. That juice, he said, was all he really cared about. The rest, he claimed, was his details. And Pam writes, the God most of us believe in is an invention of man fabricated for the sake of convenience. We accept this human-made God as an indisputable fact, but it makes no sense. If God is love, if God is perfect, if God is all beneficent, are there other beneficent descriptions we ascribe to him? Why would he toss anyone in a lion's den? Furthermore, why would anyone in their right mind want to hook up with a capricious and unjust God who gets his dollies from punishing them? Even the dishiest of women know theoretically she shouldn't hang out with a guy who might hurt her. I mean, who needs it? No sooner had I mastered my ABCs than I was taught that I, little Pammy Sue Grout, was a miserable sinner and had fallen short of the glory of God. It was a fact, same as 2 plus 2 equals 4, and I just didn't understand it. The only redeeming part of this all-important lesson is at least I wasn't alone. Turns out everybody else in the world is a sinner, too, even Mrs. Beckwith, my tender-hearted kindergarten teacher, who let me bring Pokey, my pet turtle, to class every other Monday. The bad thing about being a sinner is it guarantees a one-way ticket to hell. It was a little hard getting a handle on hell, being I hadn't traveled much farther than Kansas border. But according to my dad, hell was not a place you wanted to be. It was harder than my Aunt Gwen and Uncle Ted's house in Texas the summer the air conditioner broke. And unlike that vacation that ended after 4 days, you stay in hell for eternity. So to understand eternity, Dad said, you think of how you felt like last December 26th waiting for Christmas again? The escape clause is that you can get saved. So when I was 4 years old, with the church organist playing Just As I Am, I walked to the front of the Little Methodist Church in Canton, Kansas, plopped down on my knobby little four-year-old knees, and asked the good Lord to forgive me for my sins. My family, from a long line of Methodists, collectively breathed a sigh of relief. Dad and Mom called all the aunts and uncles that very night to broadcast the good news. "Well, our oldest is officially saved now," they crowed proudly. "At least we can be assured that Pam is going to heaven." The best part, they figured out, was that my conversion couldn't help but set a good example for my sister, Becky, who was 2, and my brother, Bobby, who was only 3 months old, although I secretly hoped they would give him until he was old enough to talk. Of course, you didn't want to take any chances. I mean, Jesus could come back at any time, day or night. He was like a thief in the night, they stated. He could come in the morning while you were sitting, while you were stirring circles in your Captain Crunch cereal. He could come at recess while you were hanging from your knees on the monkey bars. He could even come at 2 in the morning while you were sleeping, which could be a real problem if you happened to be a heavy sleeper. Jesus could snatch you up before you had time to get the sleep out of your eyes. And that you didn't even, want to think about. I mean, Aunt Gwen and Uncle Ted's house was hot. At the same time, I was learning to accept my true sinful identity. I was being told over and over again that God is love, never mind that the churches presented God as a sort of hidden camera that watched over everything I did. It made no rational sense. But of course, I was only 4. What did I know? Even though I was yawningly close to being a perfect kid, I made straight A's, tried not to fight with my siblings, stayed away from drugs and alcohol, and even made my bed without being told, I thought I was constantly being critiqued by this loving God who was sitting up in heaven, gleefully rubbing his hands together whenever I screwed up, which seemed to be pretty often. What a legacy to dump on an innocent child. And she further writes, ask the average individual if he believes in God, and he would probably say something like this, "Well, duh. However, it's unlikely he will have ever asked himself exactly what he means by God. When pressed, he would probably offer some cliche about the guy upstairs. Trying to define God, of course, is impossible. God isn't static any more than electricity or light is static. God lies beyond the material world of matter, shape, and form. It fills the cosmos, saturates reality, and supersedes time and space. But that doesn't stop us from trying to construct definitions. Here are the top 8 whoppers we've made up about God. God is a him. Even though the progressive churches sometimes refer to God as she, the field of potentiality or possibilities doesn't really have a gender. We certainly didn't talk about Mrs. Electricity or Mr. Gravity. The more appropriate pronoun would be it. The field of possibility is a force field that runs the universe, the same energy source that grows flowers, forms scabs over skinned knees, and constantly pushes for wholeness. God is more like the force in Star Wars. A presence that dwells within us, a principle by which we live. That's why Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader have become such phenomena. Star Wars is a myth that speaks to us at a deep gut level. Some part of us knows that the Force is with us and that we, through our words, thoughts, and deeds, create the world. Whopper 2. God looks like ZZ Top, makes black check marks after your name, and is basically too busy working on world hunger to care about you. this is another fallacy. God, if you believe the accepted box, is a little like Boo Radley in To Kill a Mockingbird, this mysterious neighbor constantly peering out the window of his penthouse suite, waiting to catch us doing something naughty, naughty. We can't really see him, but we've been properly warned that he's there, watching, judging, monitoring our every move. And these are some beliefs that Pam states that we have. If you don't follow this commandment, or if you break that rule, God just might send the angel secret service after you to bop you in the head like Bunny Foo Foo. Okay? And God plays favorites is another one that people believe. Another fallacy is God rewards our suffering and gives us bonus points for our sacrifice. Another one, whopper number six, which is a fallacy. You don't want to ask too much from God. You certainly don't want to bug him. Whopper number seven, God is just so vague. And whopper number eight, God only answers when he's good and ready. So, Pam basically asserts that all of these statements, which are very, very religious, are not true. They have no basis in fact. And that God is this wonderful, wonderful energy force, presence, that permeates everything in the universe. It permeates everything that's out there and responds to us based on our allowing this wonderful energy to come through. And God is very supportive of everything of us, even when we quote-unquote do things that are not the best and the highest. This energy field force called God is non-judgmental and looks and wants to support you. So she gives you experiments that disprove all of those fallacies that I just talked about God being a vengeful God. And in most religions, people have been told that, and they believe that. And so if you're a worthless sinner, what's the use of trying? Because everything you do is going to be condemned. So people, particularly in certain religions, just give up. They're like, well, it's no need in my trying to do anything that's kind, because I know I'm going to make a mistake, and once I make a mistake, God is waiting for me to make the mistake, and it's going to zap me, and I'm going to burn in hell. So they just say, well, if I'm going to burn in hell anyway, let me have fun while I'm on the road. So let me do whatever I want to do. So that judgment, what's happened is that we have made God into the likeness of man. So we've given God human qualities. And which is as far from the truth as day is from night. How humans think, that is what we've placed on this being we call God. So, if anyone wants to join me in the discussion this evening, please feel free to call 1-818-572-8023 and press 1. Again, the call-in number is 1-818-572-8023 and press 1. So in the first experiment, she tells us, because, you know, we have all these myths about God. In this experiment, you're going to devote 48 hours to looking for evidence of this all-knowing, all-perfect energy that you call God or Jehovah. Okay. So, luckily, God exists every single place you could ever think to look. And she states, to up the stakes, you're going to ask God for a blessing or what I call an unexpected gift. You're going to give it 48 hours to send, you're going to ask God to within 48 hours, to send you a gift you wouldn't normally receive, a surprise check in the mail, a card from an old friend, something that is truly unexpected. You don't get it you don't get to specify the blessing. That comes later in experiments number 4. But you do need to give a clearly defined request and a concrete deadline. And as always, it helps to ask for help in recognizing your gift. Okay? So you would say, okay, I'm going to, since I have gone to church, I've gone to the mosque, I've gone to the temple all of these years, and I've been praying to this amorphous being that I call God or Jehovah or Allah, you can say to yourself, I'm going to step out there, and I believe it in my heart, but I'm going to step out there and make it more concrete. I'm going to ask this presence, this field of potential energy, field of unlimited possibilities, Jehovah, infinite source, to give me a blessing. And I'm not going to be very, very specific about it. I'm just going to say, I want a blessing that is so, that would be so noticeable, that would be so different that I can't, that I would be unable to deny that it exists. So I'm going to step out and ask for a blessing. It's going to be very, very, very clear to me that it is something that is out of the norm. Now, you can ask for a specific thing if you want. She says, don't really specify. But you can do that. And you're going to ask that it be made manifest to you within 48 hours. And you would know when you see it that there's no way that this is a coincidence. This thing is so out of the norm. And so you would get 48 hours for it to happen. And so she talks about some friends of hers that she challenged to do this, and I did it too, and I mentioned it before, but I want to mention it again. She states, when my friend Wendy tried this experiment, she received not just one, but two unexpected blessings. She got a dollar an hour raise, her boss called out of the blue, and her brother, who lives out of state and never calls unless there's a death in the family, volunteered to help her move, something he's never done in the 6 moves she'd made before. Robin, another friend, went to her car during the 48-hour time frame during which she was conducting the experiment and found a gorgeous handmade leather purse, a gift left by a friend who had no idea she was doing the experiment. I love the purse so much, I still carry it today, she says. Now, Pam states, results, depending on your consciousness, vary. Some people get something simple. My friend Julie, for example, had a 2-year-old boy she had never seen before come sit beside her on a park bench. They smiled at each other like two reunited soulmates. Or it might be something pretty amazing. Another experimenter, Eric, was offered a free ski trip to Lake Tahoe. Now, take note of how you feel about asking the energy field for a blessing. Do you feel a bit antsy? Do you wonder if you're being selfish? Do you doubt whether it's appropriate to ask for something good? Now, this feeling provides telling insight. Maybe you don't believe you deserve a gift. If you're feeling a little uncomfortable. Some people do. It's interesting because some people feel like they don't have a right to ask Jehovah, God, Allah, infinite source, whatever name you want to call this wonderful energy field or presence. They don't feel like they have a right to desire and to state their desires because of their belief systems, their religious beliefs, like they're a worthless sinner or, you know, you don't ask, you just wait and receive. So then nothing can come because they don't ask. Ask and ye shall receive. Knock and the door shall be opened. Seek and ye shall find. But if you don't do any of that and then you don't benefit from any of it, and then people become upset and angry. Okay? This thought sends signals to the universe and to the energy field and affects its resonance. Perhaps you think it's only appropriate to ask for something you need. That signal, too, is being radioed to the energy field. So what you're going to do now is just ask for a blessing. You're not going to say, okay, well, I'm going to tell God, you know, I just want this because I need this. I'm not going to ask for a spa treatment or for a vacation overseas or a vacation in the islands because that wouldn't be right. You know, he's so busy or she's so busy, I'm asking for things that are superfluous. Well, if you feel like you don't deserve and that you don't have the right to ask and to believe that you can get whatever you desire, then that is saying something about your consciousness. And so tonight that's what we want to really have you explore and look at, because if you think that you don't deserve, you're sending those radio signals out to the universe and the field of potentiality, and it has to come back to you. I know in Christianity they have something, Isaiah 55, that says, your words did not return to you void. So if you're talking about something or thinking about something and you think that you don't deserve it, then it cannot return to you void. So we have to definitely be aware of our thoughts and make sure that we're sending the correct thoughts and out to the universe, to the field of potentiality. And this will keep you in touch with and abreast of what you're thinking. And she says, to do this experiment properly, you have to set aside skepticism. Not forever, just for 48 short hours. All you have to do is spend 2 days expecting to see proof. Expect to see the dude in living color. Expect it with your whole heart. Expect it with every ounce of your soul. Like any good hypothesis, this one is falsifiable. If you don't hear from the field of potentiality or from God in 48 hours, feel free to write it off. Okay? So now these are the steps. Number one, pick a time to start the experiment. Now usually works for me. Number two, jot down the time and the date. Number three, ask God to make his presence known. Ask for a blessing. If you like, repeat the intention or approach listed on the following lab report sheet. Or make up your own. Okay, that's it. Let's go and observe. So the three things that you need to do, and you need to pick a time to start the experiment, and you need to jot down the time and the date, and you need to ask God or the field of potential possibilities to make its presence known. And ask for a blessing. And what you do is you can just repeat your intention or your approach. And then more specifically, okay? So you're proving that there is an invisible energy force field of infinite possibilities, and it's yours for the asking. You're proving in so many words to use more spiritual terms that God exists. Because we know, people know when they go to the mosque, to the temple, to church or whatever, they believe on Sunday. But the rest of the week, we put God on the no-call list. So we don't call and we don't believe that that energy is all around us all the time. And we're begging and pleading for God to assist us. And so we're going to show you that God is always there. The energy is never not with you. Okay, so what you're going to do is give yourself 48 hours. You're going to state the date and the time and then the deadline for receiving your gift. So if you start today, 24 hours from today will be Tuesday evening around 8 o'clock. 48 hours would be Wednesday evening around 8 o'clock, so you set the date that you expected. Whenever you start this evening, you just state 48 hours for the day in which you expect for it to manifest or to for you to allow it to come into your energy field, into your world. So you're basically stating you want a clear sign that cannot be written off. So you're not going to ask for a blessing for someone to come by and knock on your door if you know someone's coming by to knock on your door. That's not a sign. You're asking for a blessing that is out of the ordinary. And for me, when I did it, I didn't tell God what to present to me. I just said, make it so clear that I cannot pretend that it's not coming from you and that it's a coincidence. And what I saw, and I think I mentioned it on the show before, is I saw this beautiful, beautiful bunny rabbit in my backyard in the middle of the day, which is very unusual. They don't show up in the broad daylight in the back because the animals around that are predators. But I saw this bunny rabbit looking right at me in my backyard. And so I'm like, and before I knew it, the words that came out of my mouth were, oh, this is such a blessing. Now, I did not connect what I had asked God for, the infinite source for, universe, Allah, Jehovah for. I didn't connect that until after I said it. I said, oh, this is a manifestation of my asking for a blessing. So, oh, I get it. So for some people, they would think, oh, that's not a blessing. That's something very, very small, and a bunny rabbit would have shown up anyway. So for you, for me, because I know that the blessings come in small as well as large packages, that was my blessing. But for any of you out there who want to try this experiment, ask for a blessing that is so incredible that you know that there's no other way that it could have come except through your request, you know, asking the Most High God or Jehovah for it, okay? So you're going to state what you want. You're going to state when you're going to ask. If you ask for it now, you're going to expect it to show up within 48 hours, and you're going to ask it to make itself so clear and so apparent to you that there is no way that you can dismiss it as a coincidence, right? So that's experiment one. Now she says for experiment two, the premise, what shows up in our lives is a direct reflection of our inner thoughts and emotions. She says, my friend Linda told me an amazing story about a young woman she once observed at the airport. This poor young thing was struggling with three heavy bags, but worse than the unwieldiness of her baggage was her less than positive attitude. With great gusto, she was vocalizing her immense disgust at a lack of help. Why, she kept shouting, is the bus taking so long? Where is that bus? This is completely unacceptable. Linda said she might I felt sorry for the girl, except that the very bus she was criticizing was 5 feet in front of her, with its door wide open. Twice the bus circled, each time stopping to pick up passengers, but the irate young woman could not see it. The bus, thanks to her intense commitment to struggle and her intense commitment to anger, was literally out of her energetic sphere. So that's what happens to us. I see people praying and praying and praying and asking for something, and it shows up. But it doesn't show up the way in which they want it to show up, so they don't recognize it. And it's right there within their reach. Now, people ask for, you know, an increase in their salary, and then all of a sudden, you know, they might find, or for money, and then they might find a penny on the ground. So, and then we ignore that and say, oh, who dropped this penny? This is worthless. And I pick it up. So you've asked for something, and the universe is giving you small beginnings because that's where your consciousness is. And when you expand your consciousness, it expands the amount of money that can come to you. So, but when you don't appreciate the small beginnings, the larger things that you say that you desire cannot come to you. So everything is already there. Whenever we ask, it's already there. We just can't see it because our brain, and this is what this book is so phenomenal in doing, our brain has not been programmed to see it. So according to physicists, there's a zero-point field, what Linda calls the field of potentiality or the field of potential, where every possibility exists. For example, there's a possibility you could be a ballerina, another that you could be a U.S. senator, still another is being a bag lady. When it comes to the field of possibilities, the possibilities are infinite. Since I'm not a physicist and can barely pronounce the name David Bohm, let alone understand his theory of layered realities, I prefer to think of the field as a gigantic Walmart with hundreds of thousands of products or possibilities. This is probably a good thing to mention. This is probably a good time to mention. I'm not a fan of Walmart, and neither am I. I'm reading Linda's words, and I'm not a fan either, as Jamila Franklin. I am not a fan of Walmart. That I've never quite been able to forgive the corporate giant for running my favorite corner pharmacy and fabric store out of business. But as a single mom, she says, on a budget, I do occasionally lower myself to shop there. And when I do, I know just where to find the fabric, the puzzles, the kids' shoes, all things I've been known to purchase. But I'm completely oblivious to most of the hundreds of thousands of products on the shelves. Why? Because they're not what I'm looking for. That doesn't mean they're not there. Doesn't mean that they're not real, as the puzzles and shoes. It just means I'm not aware of them. She states, for example, my daughter once came home from school with headlights. After panicking and briefly considering throwing myself off the nearest bridge, I finally concluded I would provide a much better parental example by going in search of lice shampoo. Sure enough, on an aisle at Walmart, I'd walked down dozens, probably hundreds of times, was a complete section of lice shampoo. Why had I not noticed it before? Because it wasn't what I was looking for. Okay. So now she talks about a few years ago, a sweepstakes agency gave away 100 free trips to anyone to anywhere winners wanted to go. That meant lucky winners could fly to Paris to see the Eiffel Tower or jet to Australia and climb Ayers Rock or lounge on a beach in the Caribbean islands. And you know what? 95% of the winners picked a destination within 4 hours of their home. 4 hours. Now, this is incredible. Her point here is people are so used to doing the familiar. Now, they've won the sweepstakes. They could go to any place in the world. Rather than going to a place with which they're unfamiliar, they chose the familiar. And they chose that because the other places, like she said, Paris or a wonderful island in the Caribbean or a place on the continent of Africa or in Australia, those things are beyond their comprehension. So they wouldn't pick places like that. They only pick places that were within 4 hours of where they lived because their brains couldn't think beyond that. They had limited their options. That pretty much sums up the human condition. So much is out there, but most of us choose to stay within 4 hours of our comfort zone. We refuse to budge even when there's ample evidence we're missing out on big things. Without being truly conscious of it, we spend the lion's share of our waking hours immersed in the comfort zone of negativity. The pull of the negative is so strong that many of us navigate our entire days jumping from one depressing thought to another. And these are some of the thoughts. I overslept again. This war is unconscionable. The economy is in shambles. Gas is expensive. My boss or my kid or my is driving me crazy. See, these are the thoughts. We keep thinking and rehearsing these thoughts over and over and over again. Negativity and fear start the minute we're born. It's a scary world out there, Jimmy. Don't you dare talk to strangers. Don't you dare sing that silly song at the grocery store. Someone might hear. These are all the tapes that we've been programmed to believe and think, okay? And she writes, we learn to limit based on these beliefs. We learn to believe in scarcity. We learn that our natural inclination to love and to create and to dance is impractical and scary. Our parents think it's their sworn duty to teach us to be careful, to be responsible, to act like adults. And if for some reason we're lucky enough to get parents who don't dispense these lessons, our culture quickly indoctrinates us into believing that collecting material things is our purpose in life, and that the only thing and the only way to get those goodies is to put our proverbial noses to the grindstones. By the time we're in grade school, we're already masters at competition. All pros are living in scarcity and fear. But guess what? It's all a big ruse, a bad habit. As A Course in Miracles clearly states, once you develop a thought system of any kind, you live by it and teach it. Once you form a belief, you attach all your senses and all your life to its survival. Physicists call this phenomenon collapse of the wave. Infinite numbers of quantum particles are out in the universal field, dancing around, spreading out in waves. The moment someone looks at these energy waves, they solidify like gelatin in the refrigerator. Your observing is what makes them appear solid, real, material. Remember in Disney's Snow White, when she's lying on the forest floor crying, she feels as if all these eyes are staring at her. And indeed, dozens of forest creatures are skittering and scampering about. But the moment she raises her head to look, all the cute little birds, squirrels, and deer dive behind trees. All she can see is a solid, unmoving forest. In reality, our universe is a moving, scampering energy field with infinite possibilities. But because our eyes have locked in on problem mode, that's what appears to be reality. So in essence, what she's saying is that, be it Christianity, be it Islam, be it Judaism, be it Yoruba, be it Buddhism, be it whatever it is, all the belief systems tell us that you have infinite choices and infinite possibilities. And we believe it as long as we're in the church, in the mosque, in the temple, or whatever, or with our Wednesday meeting, Bible meeting group, or whatever. And then when we leave those very, very sacred places, we start to doubt. Because what? You look at the television and it tells you, okay, you know, the economy is in shambles. You listen to your neighbor who's complaining. You look down the street and people, you know, are no longer working because they said that the factory is closed. So you start, and you read the newspaper. So you start believing, and so what you look at and you program your subconscious to believe, that becomes your reality. So you start feeding it more and more when in fact, just like you see this person without a job down the street, the field of infinite possibilities, or God, says, you know, Sue, I have something waiting for you. It's seeking you as much as you're seeking it. But you just have to believe and just know that it's there. But what does Sue do? Sue looks at Marie, who is her neighbor, who works for the same firm as she. Marie lost her job, so Sue believes that that's her reality as well. So rather than Sue holding on to the belief that she heard in church on Sunday that all things are possible, Marie just lost her job, so now Sue believes that Marie's fate is going to be her fate. So it has to become her fate. Why? Because that's her belief. So the field of infinite possibilities, which has millions and billions and billions of options for Sue, collapses because she doesn't believe in it. If anyone would like to share in the discussion, please feel free to call 1-818-572-8023 and press 1. Again, the number is 1-818-572-8023 and press 1. And I am discussing again the number one New York Times bestseller, E Squared by Pam Grout. And we're talking about the field of possibilities. So, because Sue believes, you know, when you go to point zero is where all things are possible. That's when you have no thought. That's when you surrender, as they say in different belief systems, religious systems. That's when you surrender. And I mentioned this before. This is what happened to Oprah, when she really wanted the role in The Color Purple. She said that she had been doing everything she could. She had read for the part. She knew that Sophia was her role. Harpo was the name of the character who was to be her husband, and that was her name backwards. She just saw all of the signs that the role was for her, and she never got the call. And she called Mr. Cannon, who was the casting director, and he told her, do you know we have people like Alfre Woodard, you know, auditioning for this role, and basically you're a nobody, and you don't call me, I will call you. So she felt so discouraged, and she said she was in the gym crying, pleading with God. And so finally a song came to her mind, and it was called I Surrender All. And when she heard that song, it just resonated with her spirit. And she stopped. She said on the treadmill and said, God, I surrender. I give this up to you. I'm no longer going to push and try to manipulate and cajole to get this to happen. If it is within the divine will, so be it. If not, I'm okay. Time she surrendered her thought, Steven Spielberg called. And I've mentioned this before on my show, and I know that some of you are probably have heard this before, too, if you listen to Oprah. Steven Spielberg called. And when he called, he told her basically that she had the part as long as she did not lose any weight. If she lost any weight, the part would not be hers. So once you surrender, and that's going to point zero in terms of consciousness, it's where there's no thought. There's nothing except surrender, and it's the vastness of the universe. And you're surrendering, and that's where everything is possible. Infinite things are possible because there's no resistance. When you're worrying about things, there's resistance. When you're complaining about things, there's resistance. When you're discouraged about things, there's resistance. When you're trying to figure things out, there's resistance. And the real purpose for the mind is basically to state the desires to the universe, to the infinite source, to God, and to get out of the way. But we've been trained that we have to figure things out. And so when you get in the process of trying to figure things out, then you have a finite or limited kind of outcome because your brain does not see the infinite possibilities. It can't see it. It's the human mind. But when you surrender it to the superconscious mind, which we all have, when you surrender it to God like Oprah did and you let go, then all of the possibilities, the field of possibilities, all of the things become known, and you have more choices. But if you're thinking or trying to come up with your own solutions, then you will come up with what you know, which is limited, like the people who have received, who have won the sweepstakes and only went to places 4 hours from where they lived. Those were things within their field of understanding or their field of possibilities. They couldn't think beyond that, so they limited most of their options. So, now, and we talked about before about the people, the caddies who had a farm, and on this farm, they were in Scotland, and they were very poor, and this guy was making maybe $20 a week to feed a family of five, but he believed, and his family believed in infinite possibilities. So every day they came up, and they just focused on the land, and they focused and said that they knew that all things were possible for this land that they had. And in quote-unquote reality, the soil was poor. There was nothing that could grow in this area. All their neighbors were not successful in growing anything, but these people just kept focusing on the possibility and the reality that all things are possible. And the guy says, and they're now world known, it's called the Caddy family. And Peter says, you can bring about anything by your thoughts. Align yourself with God consciousness, and you can bring about truth in material form. What you think, you create. There is no power on earth that can cut you off from this source except your own consciousness. So now, for a second experiment, for the next 48 hours, you are free to go back to, and you, for the next 48 hours, we want you to do this experiment. And after it, you can go back to your life as soon as this experiment is over. You're going to actively look for certain things. You're going to actively look for certain things, okay? So, for the first 48 hours, and I've mentioned this before and I've done this, look for sunset beige cars, okay? And you're going to make the following conscious intention. I hereby intend for the next day of my life to look for sunset beige vehicles or cars. That's what you're going to state. So the first experiment is to say that you want to have a blessing and be so obvious that you cannot just dismiss it as a coincidence. For the second one, you're going to state, I'm looking for sunset beige vehicles. And then you want to simply notice if your consciousness will make this made known to you, because you're stating this intention to your brain. So I guarantee you would notice these sunset beige vehicles. You would see far more than you've seen before. Okay, and on day two, during the second 24-hour period, you're going to make the intention to find yellow butterflies or purple feathers. Just make the intention. So whatever it is, what you're doing basically is you're going to state something that you normally would not state. You're going to ask to see certain kinds of vehicles, and you're going to ask to see certain kinds of butterflies, you know, certain colors, yellow butterflies or butterflies with blue wings or whatever. And you're going to record both. You're going to, on your sheet of paper, you're going to record the number of sunset beige cars that you saw, and you're going to record the number of butterflies observed. So what this is that, you know, we talked about how things have been outside of our consciousness. You're now training your brain to focus on things that are within the field of potentiality that have always been there, but your brain has not been observant and has not noticed it. And so these exercises, even though they seem really, really trite, they will then bring you the true things that you desire. But first you have to start out with something small, as they say in The Secret. Start out with intending to have a cup of coffee that you normally wouldn't have. Then you can get to intending to have millions of dollars. But you can't jump from disbelief to creating millions of dollars. And that's what people did with The Secret, the DVD The Secret. Say, oh, it doesn't work, because they were jumping from disbelief, trying to jump from disbelief to belief, and there was no bridge. So this is the bridge to get you there, to the larger stage, and to the larger stage of life of metaphysics, okay? Now, for the third experiment, you're going to, some of you think you have a limited life, something like 70 or 80 years, and then you wrinkle up, get rheumatism, and keel over, kaboom, it's all over. But this isn't any more true than that dream you had last night, you know, about the handsome guy, if you are a female, or the beautiful woman, if you're a male, or whatever. Your body is an imposter, a tiny fraction of who you are, and 99% of you is invisible and untouchable. So don't feel bad if you've fallen off the trap, or fallen for the trap, that you, your body, and the world around you are nothing but matter. It's not easy standing on the brink of a revolution. And these ideas that scientists are finally starting to take seriously are challenging everything we believe about our world and how it works and how we define ourselves. So you're going to try this experiment. You're going to understand more about energy. We attract our vibrational match. We are the initiators of the vibrations and therefore the magnets of the cause. So, as if you didn't already know, have enough awareness to contend with. I'm going to throw in one more tiny detail. Everything in the physical world as we know it is connected to every other thing in the physical world. You are attached and engaged to one underlying universal field. Things appear separate because they're vibrating at different wavelengths, just as the note C vibrates at a different wavelength than B flat. Each of these vibrations creates a strand in the electromagnetic field, which in turn instructs energy where to go and what to do. The pulsating energy field is the central energy of your being and your consciousness. Where is this field? There's no place where it is not. Everything in the universe is hooked up to the energy field. All life forms, whether African zebras, the hostas in your garden, or those melting icebergs, your intelligence, creativity, and imagination interact with this magnificent and complex energy field. We may look like separate bodies with separate ideas, but we are all just one big pulsating, vibrating field of consciousness. Okay, so what we're going to do now, excuse me, is I'm going to show you how to develop the method, or the second method. Even though this principle is one of the cornerstone spiritual principles, remember, spiritual just means the opposite of material. It actually first came to light not in a church, but in a physics lab. Yes, it was scientists who first discovered that, despite all appearances to the contrary, human beings are not matter, but continually moving waves of energy. In this experiment, number three, you're going to prove that your thoughts and feelings also create energy waves. Okay? So, and I did this and I had my clients do it this weekend. What you're going to do, I mentioned this before, I'm just recapping, is you're going to get two coat hangers, wire coat hangers, and unwind them because they're wrapped around at the top to warm the hook so the hanger can hang in the closet. You're going to unwind them and make them to a long, long straight rod. And then at the bottom of one, you're just going to bend it a little so it can have like an L shape, so a long rod and a small like a bottom, like an L. And you're going to get either use a washcloth or the bottoms of some straws to cut up two straws, one straw rather, and cut it in half. And you slip one half over the bottom of the L, and you slip the other half over the bottom of the L. and then you're going to hold the coat hangers as if you're a sheriff. You're going to hold them by the bottom half, like where you put the straws with the L part. They're going to look like little guns with long holsters. So the part with the straw part would be the handles. So you're going to have them bent like little handles, only long enough to have the straw half cover it. Or you can use a washcloth, because if you have the wire in your hand without something, it'll hurt. So you're going to hold one in your right hand, and you're going to hold one hanger in your left hand, and you're just going to hold it as you're sitting down and watch them, and they will flail all over the place. Let me just go from back to bottom, you know, all over the place, because your thoughts are controlling the wire hangers. So as your thoughts calm down, and I mentioned this 2 weeks ago, the coat hangers then will calm down. And then the goal is for you to think about something that's very, very negative or very painful, and just keep looking straight ahead, and the coat hangers will cross. And then once they cross, you don't uncross them. You just think about something really positive, like if you have children, the birth of a child, or one of your pets, or a very wonderful event that has happened. And then that's an expansive thought, and that would make the coat hangers expand and open back up. The purpose of the experiment is for you to see just how powerful your thoughts are, and that you can expand your thoughts or constrict your thoughts. And thoughts create and control matter. If your thoughts can move those coat hangers, just think about what your thoughts are doing in terms of attracting things to you that are positive and attracting things to you that you think are not positive. So thoughts are things. They're things. And try that experiment. I've tried it myself, and I've tried it with clients, and they have been amazed. Okay? So that's experiment number 3. Experiment number 4 is when you really know and really get the idea that thoughts are things, and you start really trying to really get on top of that and not have your thoughts really create things that end up being unpleasant. And this experiment, using nothing but the power of your thoughts, you will magnetize into your life. You will set an intention. This is experiment number 4. You will set an intention to draw a particular event or thing into your life. Now, like with the first one, when you asked for a blessing, you were not being very specific. You just wanted infinite source or God to show up and give you something out of the ordinary. So with experiment 4, you're being very, very specific. You're going to ask for a specific thing and be specific down to the exact make and model. Since you've only got 48 hours, and everything we're doing is 48 hours, since you've only got 48 hours, it's probably best to pick something that won't drive your thoughts back to thinking it's not going to happen. For example, if you decide to manifest a BMW Z3 2.8 Roadster, it's quite possible your predominant thoughts would be, yeah, right. Needless to say, thoughts like that won't get you to the end result that you're looking for. So you need to have something that you know your mind can grasp. Because the more evolved you become, you can have the thought you want the BMW Roadster and it will show up. But if this is something new for you, then think about something like, you know, you want someone to call you. You think about the person and the person's name and when you want the person to call you, or that you want a particular book, someone to give you a particular book, something that you know your mind will not cancel out. Because you think over 100,000 thoughts in a minute. So if you're thinking all these thoughts, you want to definitely make sure that you're not thinking a greater thought that's going to cancel out the thought that you say that you want to be manifested. And so pick something that will be believable for you, that your brain will allow to manifest. Because all things are possible, remember? With the field of potential possibilities, you can have anything that you want. But usually what happens is that we limit ourselves. So until you can really understand and grasp this completely, we're going to have a thought that is within your scope of belief. So now what you're going to do is say, pick something that you can get your mind around, like a front row theater ticket or flowers from your significant other. So be specific, and what you're going to do is record the date and the time and the deadline for manifesting what this thing is, whatever it is that you say that you want. Okay. So now that's experiment number 4. Experiment number 5. We're going to go over. And these things, like I said, these things definitely work. And they don't, they work and they work very quickly. Within 48 hours, we're asking for them to work. I don't suggest that you skip around. I suggest that you go in sequential order because you're building up your energetic field and building up your belief, and you're getting out of the way. You're training your mind, basically, to give up limitations. So if you jump around to an advanced experiment without doing the baby steps, then the advanced experiment probably won't manifest because you haven't done the baby steps. Okay, so experiment number 5. In this experiment, you'll spend 48 hours expecting a specific concrete answer to a specific concrete question. Okay? It can be as simple as whether to adopt a new Siamese kitten or as complicated as to whether or not to take a job offer. Either way, give your inner guidance 48 hours to spell it out. Okay? Your inner guidance is going to be your angel guides, the Christ within you, the Holy Spirit. Give 48 hours to spell it out to you. But watch out. I tried this once and got fired. In retrospect, however, it was the perfect answer, maybe the only one I could hear to the question I'd ask. Is it time to launch my freelance writing career? So if you say, is it time for me to go forward with my dreams, your relationship that you're in may dissolve. Because the universe is saying, yes, so we're going to get rid of all the impediments. Anything that's holding you back may dissolve. So even though it falls apart, it's not a negative. Even though it may feel uncomfortable, it's a positive because the universe is saying, go for it, and we will give you all the support. So if a relationship dissolves, it means that a far better relationship is on the way. And that particular relationship may be stopping you from advancing and going to the next level that you so desire. So choose an issue that is troubling you, something that has a yes or no answer, something on which you're really confused and don't know what to do. I know you're thinking of something right now. Doesn't matter what it is. That issue will work out. Look at your watch. Ask for a clear, non-debatable answer and ask for it to show up within the next 48 hours. It may show up immediately. It may take only a day. But within 48 hours, expect to have a neon sign of an answer. It's your job to set the intention and the time frame. The field of possibilities, or God will do the rest. Okay? So, now, experiment number 6. The superhero experiment. All of these experiments I've tried, and they do work. They do work. And we always give a lot of power to our circumstances. Our circumstances do not control us. We control our circumstances, but we let things outside of us really control us. There was a doctor, Dr. Emoto, who did an experiment with water. And he had researchers send positive thoughts to water, and he saw certain crystals formulate in the water when people sent loving thoughts to the water. And then he saw ugly crystal formulations in the water when people were sending hateful thoughts to the water. So your thoughts affect matter. So we've gone over a lot of different possibilities and a lot of different things. So in this experiment, okay, it's going to be something very concrete. So again, we're beginners, so we're going to start with something simple. Get a cardboard egg carton, get some potting soil, and green bean seeds. Now you're going to plant two beans in each of the 12 slots of the egg carton and place it near a window. So you're going to plant two beans in each of the 12 slots of the egg carton and place it near a window. Water the plants every couple of days and make the following conscious intention. State, with my innate energy, I will that the beans on the left side of the egg carton grow faster than the beans on the right side. Again, you're going to state, with my innate energy, I will that the beans on the left side of the egg carton grow faster than the beans on the right side. And what you're going to do is write down your observations for the next 7 days. And by the end of the week, you will see a difference based on your intentions. In the meantime, you can experiment with kinesiology. She talks about, I'm not going to get into that because it's a bit involved. But what you want to do, too, is you want to always say positive statements to yourself. If you say that I'm fat, I'm overweight, I can't learn, or I'm always making silly mistakes, or I'm a worthless sinner, all those kinds of things, I hate my body. If you say anything that's not a truth, your body becomes affected by that because that is not the truth. Anything that's really low vibrational and negative is not the truth of who you are. But your body will respond to it and will become affected by that. But just say something that's positive, I'm loving, I'm kind, I am a thoughtful person, I'm generous, I'm compassionate. Your body will respond to that as well. And if you say I'm youthful, I am ageless, your body will respond to that, and you will see your cells responding and not aging. So what you want to do with the green beans is you will focus your attention on a row of green beans, and you will send those seeds positive vibrations and expect them to be influenced by your energy. And the other side, you will not send anything, or you will send them negative vibrations, and you will see in a week, in 7 days, the results of that. Now, experiment number 7, the food fight. We think that that what we eat really can make us fat, and it is because I'm a vegan for the most part. I don't advocate that people eat fast foods and a lot of sugar and all of that. I don't advocate that because those things don't have a lot of nutritional value, and your body can't do anything with that. But I think we have this war going on in this country with our thoughts about food. So in this experiment, you're going to give up your ongoing grudge against the food you eat. You're going to think of every single morsel that enters your body as your best friend, or at least a thoroughly nourishing acquaintance. Energy worker Thomas Hanna says that when we look at a person's body, we're observing the moving process of that person's mind. It's our beliefs about ourselves, more than a banana cream pie we couldn't resist, that cause us to gain weight. So for starters, in this experiment, you're going to refrain from saying anything negative about your body. You may notice this is hard to do. Every time you make a disparaging comment, turn it around. If not out loud, then at least silently to yourself. For example, Your best friend calls, and without thinking, you blurt out, "I ate a whole bag of buttered popcorn at the movie yesterday. I probably gained 8 pounds." Cancel it by saying something like, "Well, I did spill half the bag when Antonio Banderas took off his shirt, and I actually think I look thinner." You don't have to be modest. It's okay to admit that you're a knockout. Food is full of energetic juju, and eating should be a thoroughly positive experience. We've gotten so far off track on this that this experiment could be the very hardest that most people are able to undertake. Because feeling guilt about food is such an ingrained habit, this may feel completely unnatural. It may take some practice. You might even have to repeat this experiment if you notice the old pattern creeping back in. If you find yourself wondering how many calories of fat grams you're about to consume, that's why this experiment takes 72 hours rather than 48 hours. What we're looking to prove is that your thoughts and energy are in a continual dance with the world around you. Remember, when people used to pray before meals, my family always did, even at restaurants, which embarrassed me to no end when I was in junior high. Now I know those prayers put positive energy and good thoughts into the food. Not that we were conscious of it at the time, but I must tell you that nobody in my family has ever had much of a weight problem. So during this experiment, you're going to do the following. Refrain from talking crazy about your body, if possible. Refrain from negativity of any kind. Number two, before you put anything in your body, send it loving thoughts. Put your hands over it and give it a blessing. Number three, concentrate on infusing your food with love, joy, and peace. That's it. Weigh yourself the day you start and 3 days later. And the result will be that you will probably lose a pound. The hypothesis is, if my thoughts and consciousness are in a continuous dance with my environment, the food I eat can't help but be affected by my thoughts. By changing what I think about and say to my food, I will be healthier, and for the sake of this experiment, lose at least 1 pound. So you're going to give yourself 72 hours. You're going to weigh yourself first thing in the morning when you start, and then weigh yourself first thing in the morning 3 days later. And the approach, don't change a single thing about your diet. In fact, what you eat should be a non-issue during the time period of this experiment. However, every time you do eat something over the next 3 days, whether it's your morning over easy eggs or an afternoon slice of coworker's birthday cake, deliberately and consciously send the food positive, loving thoughts before ingesting it. Thank it for nourishing you and expect it to contribute to the betterment of your body. So what will happen is rather than gaining weight, your body will use what it needs and you will stabilize your weight or release, I don't like the word lose because it sounds like it's a deficit, or release the weight that your body no longer needs. So that's experiment number 7. Experiment number 8. In this experiment, you're going to send a message to someone you know using the concept of non-locality. According to Laurie Day, author of Practical Intuition, it's as easy as sending an email. The good thing about this experiment is you don't even have to leave your easy chair. The majority of your interactions with other humans occur in the non-physical realm. All those thoughts you think you're privately keeping to yourself, they're not really private. Since we're all connected, you might as well be bellowing them over in intercom. Suddenly, everyone is getting the message anyway. We're all connected. Forget therapy. You can save all kinds of cash by simply changing the dialogue within your own mind. But be careful what you ask for. Sandra Ray, co-founder of Loving Relationship Training and a former teacher of mine, tells a funny story about communicating through the unseen energy database. She went to Leonard Orr, another one of my teachers, to find out why she kept wrecking her car. He told her to make a different intention in the form of an affirmation. She scoffed and said, "You mean to tell me that with nothing but an intention, I could even get men to call me on the phone?" "Of course," he said, "try it." She began sending this intention out to the field of potentiality. "I now receive an abundant inflow of calls from men." Within 4 days, every single one of her old lovers called, some of whom she hadn't seen in months, some for years. "Incredible as it sounds," she says, "I began to receive calls during the night, wrong numbers from men. I didn't even know." Needless to say, she changed that intention to one that worked. Here are the steps. Number one, choose your target, because you're communicating telepathically now. While it's certainly possible to send a message to practically anyone, I suggest sending someone you've already met. Number two, choose what kind of action or response you want. The more specific you get, the better. Be very clear about your agenda. For my most recent experiment, I sent a message to my partner, Jim, "Bring home a loaf of bread." Number three, place your target in front of your mind's eye. Number four, be with your target by embodying, experiencing your connection. Words are often an ineffective way to get a message across. Engage all your senses and believe in your message. To make it more effective and to add a little fun, shower your target with good thoughts. Send them incomparable messages and blessings. Think about them winning the lottery, getting a date with someone that they know or want or desire, winning a trip around the world. So the hypothesis for that one is, if during the next 2 days, I telepathically send a specific message to a specific person, I will get evidence that he or she received it. So you write down the date that you're going to send a telepathic message, the time, okay, and 48 hours expected. The last experiment. This experiment would dispel the myth that life sucks and then you die. Most of us, whether we admit it or not, believe life is hard. We believe there's only so much to go around, whether we're talking money, time, or popcorn. At a multiplex cinema, even people with Maseratis in the garage spend way too much time figuring out how to get more. Okay? So now what we're going to do, the method. This experiment will prove what Sally Field finally figured out when she won the Oscar for Places in the Heart. "You like me. You really like me." It will prove how sublime our world really is. For the next 48 hours, we're going to keep track of goodness and beauty. The record of history, of course, is written in blood, in wars, treachery, and competition. But as a paleontologist, Stephen Jay Gould, said, the fossil record shows long, uninterrupted periods of biological stability. In fact, it's a structural paradox that one violent act so distracts us from the 10,000 acts of kindness. Human courtesy, kindness, and beauty, he claimed, are the norm. He called it our duty, our body, our holy responsibility to record and honor the victorious weight of all the innumerable little kindnesses that are all too often unnoted and invisible. So keep a journal on hand for the next 2 days and list these kindnesses. Here are examples of what you might enumerate. My wife gave me a kiss before I left for my doctor's appointment. The receptionist and I compared pictures of her new baby and my new grandson. When I entered my office with an armload of books, a stranger held the door for me. The man at the lunch counter smiled and said, "What's up?" Students in the overcrowded lunchroom graciously shared a table. My email misbehaved, and a colleague helped me sort it out. A colleague in another state responded to my testy message with grace and goodwill. So, the theory is the universe is limitless, abundant, and strangely accommodating. And you should ask the question for this last one, is my focus on a negative keeping me from seeing the reality? So the hypothesis would be, if I change my focus and my thoughts and my outlook and make a concerted effort to look for goodness, beauty, and abundance, it will show up in spades. So you note, and this is like a gratitude journal that my mentor, Joyce Reynolds, talks about. Start writing things down that you're grateful for. And the more you write things down in a journal for which you're grateful, the more those things will show up, and they will show up in abundance. And the approach is, I'm going to actively seek goodness with a vengeance. So for the next 48 hours, make a decision that you're going to respond to everything, as Reverend Michael Beckwith says, even things that are negative, that you're going to be grateful for them. Because those things that we perceive as negative are only things from the universe trying to expand itself and expand our consciousness. Because on some level, we need it, to have those experiences to help us elevate and grow to the next level. So we're going to now be grateful for everything, whether it's uncomfortable or comfortable. Because the more that we look for things and see the gratitude in everything and we're grateful for the things that we experience, the universe will give you, God, Jehovah, Allah, will give you more things for which to be more grateful. So if you, like I have done within the past few months, every time I look on the ground and I see a penny, I thank God because they're pennies from heaven. And what has happened is more and more money has come into my existence. And I'm not doing that just to bring the money, because I know that will happen. But I'm just so grateful that I go out and I've asked for God to gift me something, and I haven't had to search for it or look for it or to dig for it or whatever. It just showed up. So if I'm grateful for that, then the universe says, okay, we'll give you more. Now we see what you like. We'll give you more. But if we're talking about how things are not working, how the children are not behaving, how the world isn't working, whatever, the universe is impartial. And we say, okay, that's what she likes, so we'll give her more of the people being ungrateful or whatever. It's not making a judgment. So whatever you focus upon is what will magnify in your existence. And I know that you've heard that before. But what tonight I did is I went over 9 experiments, and I encourage you to buy the book by Pam Grout, the number 1 New York Times bestseller by Pam Grout, and go over each of these experiments. I've gone over all of them, and they definitely work. I want so much for everyone in the listening audience to have the life that he or she came here to have on this planet. I want you to enjoy the fullness of life. Life is wonderful. However, we've been programmed and trained to look at the things that are not working and to complain about the things that are not working because we think if we complain enough about it, that things will change. If we complain enough about the husband, he would change. The husband thinks if he complains enough about the wife, she would change. If you criticize the government will change. And the complete opposite happens. What you focus upon magnifies. And then we get more frustrated because we think, I told them I didn't like this, and so they should change. No. What you do is you focus on what you do want. And if that doesn't work, then that person or that situation will float out of your life, or you will float out of that person's life. You will go on to different levels because you're no longer at the same frequency. So the moral of the story for this evening is the field of infinite possibility is out there. It's waiting for us. Whatever you are seeking is seeking you just as intensely. And it wants us, God, Jehovah, Allah, wants us to step outside of our ego, to step outside of the things that we cause to block us with our minds. So that book that I went over in detail, the first show 2 weeks ago, I went over half the book, and then I recapped the first half and went over the entire book. That book is showing you how to train the mind so that my wonderful, wonderful mentor who has passed before I met her, Florence Govel Shin's things will work. People say The Secret doesn't work, the DVD. No, it does work, but it works for people who have trained their minds to a certain extent. Florence Govel Shin's words work because people have trained their minds. But for most people, they're at the very basic level of having a struggle with training their minds. So Pam Grout has done an excellent job of showing you how to train your mind. She gives you very concrete, very practical experiments to do that do not cost one dime. You can download this book for $2.89 on Kindle. So you can change your life without having to pay an enormous amount of money. And that's what's so wonderful about this. It dropped into my lap. I was reading through my list of books, and then this popped up, and my inner guides, my teachers, my spirit guides told me, you should get this book and read it and explain it and have your listening audience hear more about it so that they can pursue their dreams. This is what I know for sure, to use Reverend Michael Beckwith's words from The Secret. If you look at this book and try these 9 experiments, I guarantee you your life will change. Then, and with anything, try things for at least 90 days, 90, because it takes at least 90 days for your brain to reprogram itself. And I promise you, this I can guarantee you, that if you take the time, and she gives you 48 hours for each experiment, the one for the weight, she tells you 72 hours, because a lot of people have a conflicted relationship with their food, and they don't believe that just thinking differently would change the way in which that food is metabolized and they can lose weight. They think by counting calories they will lose weight, and that doesn't work. So, but by changing your mindset, this book helps you let go of the shackles on the brain, and most people have shackles on their brain. If you hear yourself talking about what other people are not doing for you or how they're blocking you, then you have believed that what they do can block you. They can make it uncomfortable, but they can't stop things from happening. You have billions of possibilities that are out there. So it may not come from this source where that person is trying to block you. There are billions of ways in which your good can come. But most people think their good can only come through their jobs. So when they're fired, they get upset, or through their husband, or through their wives, or through their children, or through the government, or whatever. And so they limit the good that's out there for them. And God, the field of opportunities, the field of potentiality, infinite source, Jehovah, Allah, wants everyone to understand that you're far greater than your circumstances. You're far greater than anything on the outside of you. You are the answer, as Reverend Michael Beckwith says in his PBS special that I encourage you to look at, Reverend Michael Beckwith, B-E-C-K-W-I-T-H. The answer is you. And he did the special, I think, December 2013. It's powerful because you are the answer. The infinite source has said everything that you want, the source wants you to have it. If you don't have the things that you want, and I'm not saying a particular person, because that particular person may not be the divine selection. But if you state the qualities, and if those qualities are not in your life, you have blocked it because you said that this particular person is the one who's going to give you those things that you desire, and he or she obviously is not the one because you're experiencing pain. So anytime you don't have what you want, just think that it is the mind. Your mind is blocking you. It wants what it wants. But when you surrender, like the example I gave with Oprah, when we surrender to infinite possibilities, when we truly let go and allow, all things are possible, and we go to point zero. And this is not a religious belief. This is proven in terms of science. This is proven in terms of energy. This is proven in terms of metaphysics. Because most religious people are not believers. They believe on Sunday in a mosque, in a temple, or whatever, and on Monday they're doubting how they're going to pay their bills. So you're either going to believe God, as my accountability metaphysical partner says, or your circumstances. So if you're ever having doubt, you're believing your circumstances. And that's not to have you beat up on yourself. It's just to get your mind back to what its purpose is. Your mind is not to figure anything out. The purpose of the mind is to state the desires to the universe and to step back and let infinite possibilities present themselves. You don't have to do anything anymore. You will be led. Whatever you need will show up. The person will show up. The opportunity will unfold itself. You just say to the universe, to God, to the Most High, I'm open to all the wonderful opportunities, the unlimited opportunities that are out there for me. Just point me in the right direction. And all of these experiments will lead you to the place where your mind will finally give up. If you do these experiments for 90 days, your mind will finally concede and say, I give up. But it doesn't happen, because what usually happens is we give up after the first day. Oh, it doesn't work. No, everything we talked about this evening works. Everything that Florence Gomeshin says works. Everything that Michael Beckwith says works. Everything that all the metaphysical teachers have talked about, all those things work. But it takes concentration. It takes focus. It takes discipline. Because from birth, like I read in the book today, we have been taught to give away our power and to believe that those things that are in front of us are real and they're not real. So if that's what the belief has been for, if you've been on this planet 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, 60 years, 70 years, 80 years, however long you've been on the planet, you've been programmed to work against yourself. So it's not going to change overnight unless you make a commitment. But within 90 days, you will see a marked improvement. Even before, she gives you 48 hours for each experiment, and each experiment will show you something in 48 hours. And to have a permanent shift, keep going through these 9 experiments for 90 days, and your life will permanently shift. But you will get immediate results after 48 hours. Please, I encourage you to buy the book. It's called E Squared by Pam Grout, Grout, and your life will change. And read anything by Florence Scovershin, Scovelshinn. And if you want your life to change too immediately, go online to look up Joyce Reynolds, Reynolds. Go to Joyce, Joy, Reynolds, Reynolds.com. She's my metaphysical teacher, and she's phenomenal. And she has on her website, under the Wisdom tab, ways to script your life. She shows you how to set up a scripting journal and a gratitude journal. Those two things have changed my life permanently. So Pam Grout, Reverend Michael Beckwith, Beckwith, who is the founder of Agape out in California, and he was also featured in the DVD, The Secret, Florence Gomeshin, Pam Grout, and one of my favorite people too, Iyanla Van Zandt, Vanzant. Those people are phenomenal. I wish you the best. Happy Labor Day. And until we talk again, have a great, great week. Take care.
disappointment from my mental, physical, spiritual, and emotional body. 'Cause I know that spirit guides me and love lives inside me. That's why today I take life as it